Okay. I will also carry this microphone. When I talk louder, I talk higher. It's not pretty. So I have no relationships to disclose. And today I am going to present some preliminary findings on our study looking at the impact of competitive food and beverage standards in California high schools. So, based on the title of my presentation, you've probably already guessed what our study aims are, but we'd like to capture the effect of California legislated nutrition standards on school food environments in high schools, and then we'd like to look at the effects of the resulting changes in the school food environment on meal program participation, school food service financial operations, and student intakes of selected foods. What is the legislation? SB 12 is the food legislation, and that established limits on fat and sugar content and portion sizes on all foods sold outside of the reimbursable meal program. The schools were to meet these standards by July 2007. SB 965 are the beverage standards, and that defined which schools or what beverages could be sold in high schools, and completely eliminating the sales of sodas and other sweetened beverages. Beverages sold on high school, or half of the beverages sold on high school campuses were to meet these standards by July 2007, and then all of the beverages sold need to meet these standards by July 2009. Our study sample is comprised of 57 randomly selected public high schools throughout the state of California, and just in case you're not familiar with our map, we did get pretty good distribution of urban, suburban, and rural districts, as well as small, medium, and large schools. This will really give us a good representative look at what's going on in the high schools with regards to the legislation. We collected data at two time points. The first one was in spring 2007, before the legislation went into effect, and then the second one is in spring 2008. And I should really clarify that we really begin collecting the data in spring, but it kind of goes through the fall, so we're still collecting some of our 2008 data. We used a multitude of tools to collect this data. I'm just going to highlight the ones that I really present about in this talk. The first one is a school food environmental assessment tool created by our colleagues at Samuels and Associates, and that gives us information about every single competitive food and beverage item sold on the campus. We also sent a questionnaire to nutrition services staff at every school. And then our data collectors looked at every lunch program at each school to look for things in their dining environment, like ambiance and how crowded the seating environment is and things like that. In today's presentation, I'd like to describe the school food environment, so what the meal program looks like, what competitive food and beverage sales looked like, and also some factors that we found to be associated with early adherence to the standards. So this is from our 2007 data. All of our study schools sold competitive beverages. At 91% of the schools, they sold competitive beverages through vending machines. 86% of the schools sold them through food service, 42% through school stores. And then there were also some miscellaneous venues that didn't quite fit with these other venue types, like Java carts. If we ask the question, what percent of the total beverages offered at each venue type adhere to the beverage standards, you find that on average, across the schools, most of the venue types, and overall, they were already meeting that 50% adherence rate requirement. Almost all of the schools sold competitive foods, and this was largely through food service. 82% of the schools sold their competitive foods through food service, 56% through vending machines, 51% through school stores, and again, a smattering of other venue types. And if we ask that question again about what percent of the total foods adhere to the standards, compared to the beverage venues, the food venues weren't quite as high, which is particularly interesting since 100% of the foods needed to meet the standards by July. So next, I'm going to go through some policies and practices that were in place at the schools and in food service departments that we hypothesized would be associated with the different adherence rates. Over half of the schools had campus open at lunchtime for at least some of the students. And if you're wondering what kinds of access to off-campus food sources students have, at 79% of the schools, staff members noted that there were nearby off-campus convenience stores where students could purchase food or beverage during or within 1/2 hour of the school day. 74% had nearby fast food restaurants, 74% had other sorts of affordable restaurants, and then 33% had mobile snack bars, snack carts, or wagons. I don't know if this is specific to California, but these are like little taco trucks. I've also seen popsicle carts that sometimes they just come right up to the campus gates, so kids don't even have to cross the street to buy these. 100% of the schools had a board-approved school wellness policy, and 98% of the schools said that they'd already started to implement the nutrition component of their wellness policies. Schools are using a variety of different strategies to implement policies and adhere to the standards, including eliminating and reducing food service a la carte foods and beverages, as well as eliminating and reducing other types of competitive food offerings. We asked about who was monitoring the policy, who was monitoring implementation and adherence, and then we categorized their responses into one of three categories. 26% of the schools had no monitor at all. 67% of the schools had a monitor from Nutrition Services Department, so a staff member of Nutrition Services. And then another 7% had what we're calling a non-nutrition monitor, so that could be a school administrator or a teacher. 82% of the schools said that they did seek student input in terms for what foods and beverages to offer, but that could really run the gamut from very informal input to more involved input in what kinds of foods and beverages to offer. 28% of the schools said that students were actively involved in promoting the meal program and promoting healthy eating. And then we asked about what were some of the barriers to providing appealing and healthy meal and a la carte options? And the most frequently listed major barrier that came out were costs. The cost of food and beverages and labor costs were the biggest issues. So we took each of those hypothesized factors and we ran bivariate correlations, first with beverage adherence and then with food adherence. And then we took the significantly correlated variables and ran regression models. And what came out after the regression models for food adherence were that the degree of implementation of the nutrition component of the wellness policy remained significant. So it was having someone designated to monitor adherence to the policies and having students involved in promoting the meal program. These were all significantly correlated with food adherence rates. Much fewer factors were related to beverage adherence, and none of those came out significant in multivariate analysis. So now let's take a look at what the school meal program looked like in 2007. What kinds of entrees were being offered? At almost all of the schools, sandwiches were offered, followed by pizza, burgers, burritos, and salads. But what was most popular amongst the students, we asked the data collectors to just walk amongst the students and see what they'd actually selected to buy for lunch. And the most popular ones are pizzas, burgers, and chicken burgers. We asked staff members to indicate which of these following items were included in half their lunch options. And it is encouraging that few schools mentioned that deep fried foods were included in half their options, but there's still a lot of room for improvement. Heat and serve made up half the lunch options in over 60% of the schools. From previous studies, we found that food courts are a promising strategy to increase meal program participation, but this was pretty infrequently observed at only 5%. Our data collectors saw that 1 in 4 schools had no formal indoor dining area, and 100% had some sort of outdoor dining area. That could also be more of a California phenomenon. But these outdoor dining spaces weren't necessarily tables and chairs. They could have just been some benches scattered around the quad. And our data collectors did note that there was not enough space in either the indoor or the outdoor dining spaces. They all looked pretty crowded. So to summarize, the schools were taking steps towards meeting the legislation before the required date. A lot of the food service departments were using strategies of eliminating offerings or reducing the offerings to meet these standards. A lot of barriers were identified, but none of the barriers came out significant. And some of our preliminary results suggest that monitoring student involvement and implementing the nutrition policy as part of a larger comprehensive school policy all affect food adherence rates. Continuing improvements to the menu and the school dining and food service facilities could definitely be used if schools want to increase their school meal program participation rates. So this will definitely be interesting to see, comparing our 2008 data to our 2007 data. What kinds of changes have they made? And there's much, much more data to come. We're really excited to begin analyzing our change data. I'd just like to thank all of our partners, Samuels and Associates, California Project Lean, the Department of Education, the School Nutrition Association, and of course all of our participating schools and the Nutrition Services Department, our funder, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and last but not least, my co-authors, Pat Crawford, Gail Woodward Lopez, and Jennifer Shaw. Thank you. We didn't ask about farm-to-school programs specifically, but since we know that so many schools are worried about costs, there is a big component of this project that wasn't included in this presentation today, but we asked them for their revenues and not their expenditures, but all their different revenues for the meal program and other a la carte sales. So we are going to take a look at the cost.
Thank you all so much.
Thank you. Were you in the last one?
I was next door there. It was a little distracting that everyone was looking at the slide, but
what they made sort of.
Oh, for this session, you mean?
For the session before, they had asked people to do this, and I can't really.
No, I can't either.
Do my notes, so.
Can you clip it on you?
Let's see. I think I'm just gonna have to sit down. That's it.
Huh?
I hate that.
I mean, this is the most awkward. You know.
Maybe if we moved it closer.
You're trying to get your next session?
Yeah, we have. No, we're just trying to figure
work
out this.
The AV.
Yeah, but you know what? You have to also hit this.
Yeah, but if you had this, like you and I are both short, if we move this up right in front of us, and then we have our notes over here, maybe.
This is a very awkward.
It's really awkward.
Hi, I'm Terry Rosenberg.
Hi, Terry. And Ferris.
Diane Dooley.
Hi, Diane.
You're the
Terry.
Yeah. So, you can't really like do what you usually do here.
No, I know, and it's not. Well, this. It looks like this should come off.
No. So in the last session, people were all like
this,
standing up, and I can't see.
Because slide for you, would that help you? If you said next slide.
Sitting down doesn't work because then no one can see you.
Yeah, I hate sitting. Yeah. How about if we do each other's slides? Would that be awkward?
Well, it sort of interrupts.
I know.
You
know,
I keep saying
next slide. So
I just don't think I can.
So you put your notes right
notes.
There. Oh, that's a point too. I don't mind having the lights a little higher. It seems like these lights are always dim.
You know what I did? I left my lips.
Do you want me to adjust the lights and see if that works?
Oh, it's adjusting my eyes.
Okay. And glasses. Okay. What I didn't do was write to where everybody was from. And,
Jane Heineken,
David, that works. Okay.
And
you're from the Public Health Institute.
Public Health Solutions.
Public Health Solutions. Okay. Right. Okay.
So this
I think it's try and see. So the only and Diane is from some other. One thing I will do is that last session, you know, again, one of the things that happens at public health. I'm used to some of the other ones where it's like you get your 10 minutes and if you don't, you're not done, you sit down. But you know, it was running over, so I really will try and. We don't necessarily have to keep it 15 minutes each, so as long as we have a little bit of time for questions. But if it gets to be like 15 minutes, and I'm going to sit right here, I'll start pulling on
you. Oh, goodness. And then we fall on you.
Right.
That ends it all.
Right. I upped the lights a little bit.
Oh,
did that work out for you guys?
So, Diane, you're from Oakland, right?
Or from Contra Costa County.
And the affiliation is
Contra Costa County Health Services.
Okay.
I'm a pediatrician working with Contra Costa County Health Services. So that, I think that's better for me too. The lights up. How are you going to do that? Are you going to stand up?
Yeah, I guess so. And then I can with my glasses. I can see the page.
And then you're going to hold the mic.
I guess so. Hold the mic. Flip.
Oh my gosh.
All right.
My
if we move the mic closer to you, that would help.
Yeah, you probably. I love company.
I think I could do it. Really? Yeah.
You
ready to talk
to her? Is that a trash
can? No. So, can we check and make sure we have
I think you have the instructions to put. You know how to put things on the screen?
No. I thought that they did it already for us.
Well, there's nothing up right now.
No, they didn't. They didn't give me any when I went on. So.
That was the last one.
Right. So, oh boy. Thank you, Terry.